Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and this is supposed to be the starting of our new season on Literary Viewpoints. And I'm still waiting for author Diane Saxton to call in. But before she calls in, there are several people that came to my rescue this week, and I want to personally make sure that I thank them publicly. Sal's Auto Body Shop, the body shop you can trust, 59 Lake Street in White Plains. We had a little problem with my car. She's quite ill. And they gave us an auto estimate within a couple of hours of bringing the car there. I've never met people so caring and understanding, especially Mark, who really took an interest and felt bad that my poor car is quite sick. So I would call them at 914-948-0194, tell them Fran from Blog Talk Radio send you Literary Viewpoints, and tell them they are number one in my book, that's for sure. And the other are the people at the Fountain Diner Restaurant. Sal, your daughter's in college. Be proud. It is fantastic that she's going for business. I am so impressed. And the Fountain Diner, the food is better than most diners. I would say it's right up there with some of those, you know, 4 or 5 star restaurants. Owner Sal, and I promised them that I would tell everyone to go to 31 South Central Avenue in Hartsdale, New York. The number there is 914-428-5457. The wait staff is better than some 5-star restaurants. I could tell you that now. And they are absolutely amazing. So thank you to the people at Fountain Diner. And Sal, thank you for lunch the other day. I'm still waiting for the author to call in. I believe she might any minute. But until she does, I'm going to tell you some about my best picks. And if she doesn't call in, I guess I'm going to say have a nice day. And her publicist did call her. And I will wait. I will tell her. I am waiting 15 minutes. I am waiting 10 minutes. And then ending it. I have to tell you that I think that there's been... Oh, there she is. Fantastic. Thank you. Diane?
Yes.
Hi, this is Fran. How are you doing?
Oh, fine.
Okay.
Good
morning. We are ready for Peregrine Island. That was really... I was really glad that Noelle asked me to read it. And
oh,
it's amazing. Finding a painting on your wall and what they found behind it really is exciting. So what made you decide on this particular area, Peregrine Island, to focus on?
The painting, you mean?
No, the whole story. What is Peregrine Island about? Give our listeners some kind of a summary of what the story is about so they, you know, want to read it.
Oh, okay. Well, it's about a family over a summer who get involved in the mystery of an heirloom painting that they have, Winter, the mother, loves the painting. And these people show up at their door claiming to be representatives from the Getty Museum. And that really... It starts a summer of intrigue. The painting, the detectives appear, and nobody knows who called them in. And this family is, I don't want to say troubled, but they're not. They don't really get along that well. There's a mother, and there's a grandmother, and then there's a child. And they live in kind of separate universes, and they don't interact that much. By the end of the book, you find that they do get along. And this story really kind of elucidates why and how that happens as well. So it takes place on the Sound. I'm sorry? Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that the Sound, for me, was almost a metaphor, and I used it almost as a character. And I could go on, but I'll let go. You go first.
I do find that the weather and the sound did come in very handy in getting to understand and create some of the suspense within the book, too. I have to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So you created this the way some other authors do, where you have Winter, Elizabeth, Elsie, and Peter, and you chose original names, that's for sure, and you decided to present the book through the voices of each character, which made it really easy to follow the plot. Yeah, some people do it, but then you wonder in which universe they're in, and they backtrack and fast forward and back flashback again, and it gets confusing. This was definitely not. So why did you choose to do it that way, and why did you choose those particular names, especially for the little girl who's my favorite character, by the way?
Oh, good. Yeah, mine too. I thought that it would be easier to get into their heads and to think the way they thought and to bring to the reader exactly who each was. I was able to relay their own thoughts easily,
mm-hmm.
and that's really why I did it, to know the character inside and out.
Well, you get to know them, you get to know their moods, you get to know why they didn't get along with each other, and I found it interesting that the little girl gets along very well with her grandmother, and the grandmother doesn't get along very well with Winter. They seem to just, like, be off, like you say, into their own dysfunctional world of make-believe.
Yeah.
But what is the title, Peregrine?
The Peregrine Falcon is a loner. They are solitary birds. They mate for life, by the way. And they're solitary, and that's why I named it Peregrine Island, because these people live in a world of their own. They are solitary. They don't really mix with the people from shore, even though they're not that far. They're in their own little world, as is the Peregrine Falcon. So that was
they're very
independent.
As the little girl is very independent.
Yeah. Right.
So Peregrine Island is part of a whodunit. That surprised me. So I'm reading about this family that doesn't get along, and all of a sudden I go like, oh, my God, there's something that's going to happen. Why did you decide to create the mystery of the painting and then the mystery of the person that created the painting, Simon Crander?
I think it's very interesting to look at a painting, and especially the older ones.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the new ones too, but not when they're not as old, though. Why somebody would paint what they paint? Who are the painters? And why did they paint what they painted? I have one painting. The man always paints from the 19th century. He always paints little boys in a kitchen with an animal on them. There's always an animal there. And they're always in the kitchen. And they're always different children. And I wonder why he paints what he paints. There must be a reason for it. But I haven't gotten into that one yet. I don't know why. But anyway, I kept staring at this painting and I kept wondering why. Why the painter painted this particular painting, and what was going on. So that's how that came about.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. So it seems that you spend a lot of time around the Long Island Sound, which used to be my sister's home stomping grounds before she... So you're meticulous in the amount of detail. I could practically see it. I could practically smell the sea air as you described it.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone has never been there, they're going to want to go there just to see it after they read the book. So it's almost like the sound is a separate character. How come you did that? It is. It felt like it was Peter and Elizabeth, Elsie, and Winter, and then the weather and the sound, all of them locked up to create the suspense, even the storms were perfect.
I lived on the water for many years, and we had to evacuate numerous times. We lived on a peninsula off a peninsula, so we were surrounded by water. And I think that you have to get to respect the sound. It's a living, breathing thing. And I grew to respect it. I was scared of it a lot, but I was I was awed by it too.
So you dedicated your book to your mom. How come? I did that for my last one. I dedicated it to her because she had Alzheimer's, and the book was about Alzheimer's. So why did you dedicate the book to your mom? Talk about that a little bit and about the complicated relationship between Winter and Elsie. Yeah, they really did not see eye to eye on anything.
My mother believed, and no matter what, even if you didn't get along, she thought the importance of family was the most important thing in the world. And that overcame everything else. And I tried to show that in this book. These people, while they didn't get along, they loved each other. And that really trumped everything, especially at the end. So while they weren't alike at all, and while all of them had their devils to conquer, they still loved each other, and that came first. And I hope to show that by the mystery of the painting as well.
Well, it sounds like my mother, because no matter who it is, you had to walk in and hug the person and give them a kiss before you walked into the house, so you weren't allowed. Because family first. As a matter of fact, I was an educator, and I was going for a couple of advanced degrees. And if my cousins needed help with something, she would say, "I know you have all this work to do, but you got to stop, find out how you can help them." I go like, "Ma, I have all this work to do." Still, that's how she was. You need to stop. When a family member calls you, which they still do, to do something, help them with a college report or anything, you just stop and do what you're supposed to do to help them. And it's ingrained, I think. So I love art, and I love art auctions and paintings. So in the novel, your painting that has been in Winter's family for several generations is appraised by art experts. What research did you do in order to understand how art experts appraise something, and how could you explain that to listeners?
I was pretty involved with the art market as a hobby only, but I got more and more interested in it, and I've gone to numerous auctions, so I really know how it works, and I think it's fascinating how the auctions move, and that kind of thing. So, I mean, I knew that part of the story pretty well. That was just a hobby that I had. At one point, I don't right now, but I did then. My daughter,
I found it interesting.
Is an artist as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So she could probably give you some insight into that.
I'm sorry?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
she
went
to RISD.
No, RISD. Rhode Island School of Design. So she was very involved with all that. And I became involved because she was involved, so.
Well, that is great. So things get interesting when the frame of her painting is pulled apart. This I found fascinating, because I've read other books like that, but not quite as detailed, where they discovered that there's more paintings behind it. So they found these paintings, and how common is that for a canvas to be hidden behind something like that? And I wonder how many other people don't know that there's a painting behind the painting.
Yeah, that's interesting, because you're not the first person that's asked me that, and yet I've never heard of that before. That was purely, purely made up. I don't know that ever happens. Now it might. It might now. But I've never heard of it before. I that kind of just came to me organically. And I think it's a really good idea. And I'm surprised, actually, that I've never heard of it before, because it certainly could be done. So.
Yeah, it's very possible. It's just that I wonder sometimes if you're going to get rid of the painting that's on top, you have to be careful, I guess, not to get rid of the paintings that are underneath, depending on how you reveal them, because you don't want to use turpentine or anything else. You have to be careful.
Yeah, well, these were the people that took it apart were art experts. They knew what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there was any danger of that. You don't just open it.
They were interesting.
You know, they knew where to cut. I'm
so
sorry?
You use, they were interesting characters, those art experts.
Oh, yes.
They were kind of unique, you might say. There are certain elements that you said to your story, such as references to myths. One of my favorite authors, Shakespeare, and then, of course, Moby Dick's Herman Melville. So why did you choose to incorporate these references into your stories? And I love Shakespeare.
I felt that if I use Shakespeare, and there are a number of references to Shakespeare, including some of their names, I tried to give them another layer of personality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hamlet. Hamlet was similar in a way to Hamlet. Sebastian, same thing. I tried to give them more meat, I'll put it that way. As far as the myths go, I love myths and the spirituality of myths. And for that, I just thought it would be very interesting to elucidate, to magnify the story with them, and to give them another element, spirituality, with the myths. So that was the reason for that, both of them.
That's interesting. I love myths, too. I love stuff like that. It's so much more interesting sometimes when you incorporate something even from history that most people don't know. Let me see. My next question is right here. Why did you choose to structure the novel after the three separate viewpoints? And is it difficult as a writer to do this transition? When you write something like that from three different voices, do you write all of Winter at one time and then create the next part of Elise and the next Peter? Do you write them separately or do you write them all together?
No, I don't write them separately. I don't write with an outline. I think it takes a half, but I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it takes the fun out of it. I write 1, 2, 3, and then I'll go back and edit. I wanted to, by writing within each character, dig as deep into their characters as I could and make them as real as I could and give the reader their thought. And I'm writing one right now that's in the third person, and I find that it's
nice.
Much more superficial. Sorry?
No, that sounds interesting. Why do you think it's more superficial?
I can't get as deep within them. It's okay. Mm-hmm. This is a very long historical novel, and I don't think I need to. But I kind of miss it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know these characters well, but I don't know that the audience will. Ever.
Well, if you send it to me, I'll let you know. If you send it to me, I'll let you know, because they tell me for some reason I usually get it. So if it's historical fiction, there's not a problem. I am really good at this. I just finished one by the translator of Le French book, Anne Traeger, The Lafayette Sword, probably one of the best books I've read in a very long time, where she relates something, the history of the Lafayette sword in the present and what happened to create it in the past. And the interesting part was the history of an alchemist that created pure gold. So usually I am a speed reader, and my eyes don't bother me. That's why I can't read on my computer. I read this 400 pages in like an hour and a half. I couldn't put it down, which does happen ever so often. So,
yeah, that's great.
Yeah, your book too, print pretty fast too. Yeah, I was at a medical appointment, and I said, well, let me take something good to read that I'm not going to be nervous when I have to go in there. So I was it was a calming book because of the sound and the characters. And I'm saying, good, there might be a murder and stuff, but at least it's not gory. And that made it happy. So you write them from three different perspectives. So which character was your favorite one to inhabit? Which one do you think you like the best? Besides, I like the little girl.
I like the little girl, to get into her, yeah. One of the themes, and I assume you got this, since I feel that the very old and the very young have an honesty and an innocence that others don't have, and I really tried to relay that and strongly. I hope I did that. So those two characters had such a, they were so compatible, and they were very similar. So.
Well, all I know is that I was very close to my grandmother. She was my best pal in the world. So you're right. Young people, you know, you can learn a lot from people that are much older than you. Despite what they think, or they think that you don't know anything. And then all of a sudden they start to ask you a question and they go like, oh, my God, she knows everything. And it's great. I mean, anybody over 21 to a kid that's 12 is 105 years old. And what thrills me is that when my nephew, who's 21, calls me and says, you know, I need your advice about something, or the other one says, can you help me with my, you know, term paper? And I go, you see, I've still got, you know, some spunk in me for your little auntie. So You can learn from just about anyone if you give yourself a chance. When you created the book with the characters as chapter headings, I know you included some other characters. What about Peter's father? What made you bring him back all of a sudden?
Well, that was the love of Elsie's life. He was the love of Elsie's life. And I wanted the circle to close. And do you know what I mean? The circle of the family.
Gotcha. Yeah, I gotcha.
So.
Yeah, her relationship with him was unique, I have to tell you. And I'm not sure that Peter really cared about him that much, but Elsie seemed to feel that, you know, they might have a chance, but we won't tell anybody if they did. Each character has her own personality. What happened that Elise and Winter became so alienated from each other, and Peter has this intense relationship with Elise that she would rather be with her than anyone else?
Why are they so different? Is that what you're saying?
Why do they dislike each other so much? What caused the rift between them?
Well, two reasons, and I did try to go into this too. The first reason being I tried to show the different generations and how when you're in a different generation, especially now, I think it's magnified, by somebody goes out in the world when they're a teenager, and they're just very... like a chameleon. They're very struck by everything else and they forget their family values and everything else, which she had done, Elsie, I mean, when she ran away. Also, so the difference in the generations and how they behave, I mean, do you know what I mean? And also, they were very different people besides that. Elsie was very, I don't want to say proper, that really isn't it, but she had grown up in a certain way and believed that children and people should act a certain way and acted upon that with her daughter, who was much freer. and much more athletic, and not as afraid of things. So they kind of, while they loved each other, they grated on each other because they were so different, their personalities. I mean, the daughter, you know, did things that the mother would never have done, never. That kind of thing. And that, I think that takes a toll on families when they're not alike. I mean, if you have a daughter or a son, and the daughter or son are very different, I think it's harder. Doesn't mean they love each other less, but I think it's harder. And I tried to show that.
You did. You definitely did. As a matter of fact, Elise reminded me of my mother, because she did believe that you acted without a doubt, you acted a certain way. And my mother never yelled, never raised her voice, and never hit. She just looked at you with those blue eyes, and you knew Ruthie meant business, and that was it. You just did what she said. It was much easier than standing and listening to my father lecture me for an hour and a half as to why I didn't listen to my mother, which explained why I was a straight-A student, but that's a whole other story. She's like, okay. Winter seems more concerned with Peter than her own. You know, Winter seems concerned about Peter to a point, yet she doesn't really, you know, do very much to take care of her. So it works to the advantage. And disadvantage. So how did Peter become friendly with Jake?
Wait,
why did
I
she become friendly with this
question?
Okay. Peter seems to have a mind of her own.
Yes.
Even if the little girl. And even if Winter told her to do or not do something, she did her own thing. She seemed to have this thing about going out into the water and going out, and she decided that she was going to learn more about how she's meeting Peter's father and realizing that Elise had feelings for him. She cared for someone else at the same time. She couldn't seem to create who she wanted to be with. But Peter was friendly with the older man. That's all I'll say about him, Jake.
Yes.
So why,
right.
She did, and she really liked him, which shows that she gets along better with older people rather than with her own mother, including her grandmother.
Right.
So why didn't anyone realize his role in her life, and why was she so taken with him? Nobody realized that she was so close to him.
Well, they didn't at first. They didn't think he was real.
Yeah.
Until chapters go by, a number of, months go by. And when they did, Winter found out that he was real. Elsie didn't know that he was real. And wasn't that Elsie, I think, that was extremely needy on her own and felt that Pater was almost a burden. I know she loved her, but she did feel that way. I think it's because she was unhappy. As unhappy as she was, which turns in the book as well. But so Elsie finds this old man, and the two of them have a simpatico. You know what that means, right?
Yes, I gotcha.
An Italian, they say.
I got it.
The two of them did. They reacted. She thought that he was magical. And he adored her, thought she was perfect. And they thought alike, which was interesting. He would think about everything that I don't think the average person does think about. And I don't want to give away the story, but...
No,
That has something to do with that, the way he thinks.
Well, you had some other family members... They created quite a bit of controversy. So who was Ham? Who was Seb? And Clay is the father. He was an interesting character, Clay.
No. Clay isn't the father. He's a friend.
Friend of Elise, right?
No, he was a friend of Winter's.
He
was originally a friend of Winter's. And then who had stayed there when her husband left. And he was her escort or whatever you might be. He was a hanger-on. What I don't know. You could call him all sorts of names. Sycophant. I don't know. He was supposed to work there, and he became a friend. And I think that Winter used him, and he used her. He was a type of social climber as well.
Mm-hmm.
And who else did you say?
Who was Ham?
Ham was the grandson of the painter.
Mm-hmm.
Who he thought, you know, had died. He never really knew him, but he felt that he should get involved with his grandfather's legacy. So that's why. And actually, he was called by the Getty people to come. So that's why he was there, and turns
now
out to be the grandfather. I mean, the grandson.
But he can't lay any claim to the painting, right? In
well,
other
he
words,
thinks he
once he can. He can lay claim to the painting, Ham?
He thinks he can.
That's what I'm saying. That made it even more interesting, because then there was a fight for who did it belong to. And
yeah,
how did
he
get there?
And well, then the rest of them and the others. Yeah, he thinks he has a right to them. And maybe he does.
Yeah, well, you know, they have to be able to prove ownership. And isn't there a certain kind of authenticity that you have to prove when you buy a painting, that it's yours? And then they have to figure out that it's an original, that it's right. You know,
right.
That's the easiest part. Exactly.
Yeah. So they go through
Before I forget, let me announce my shows for next week. Before I forget, I have them written on this thing. 9:13 at 10 o'clock, Lynn Constantine, The Veritas Deception. 9:22, I am really totally excited. Andrew Gross will be with us, One Man. That book was fantastic about the Holocaust. 9:27, and Diane, if you're ever interested in doing something like this, it's a panel show with Alan Topel, John Land, Alan Jacobson, and Simon Gervais. What happens when you write double plots or multiple plots in your novels? That's going to be really interesting. 10:06, Lisa Unger, Mel Cochran, and Brian Moreland, Paranormal Tuesday. It should be really interesting. 10:08, the wonderful and fantastic Tess Gerritsen is going to join us, and that's a secret. She won't tell me what the show's about yet. She has something special she wants to announce. 10:20, Bill Larkin, A Bullet Under the Blue Sky. And finally, New York Times bestselling author Andrea Kane, 10:25 at 10, My Heart's Desire. And that's just September and November and October. This show is booked till the end of December. So you just never know who's going to ask to be on it. And I'm totally honored that Diane is here today. And I'm totally honored when anybody asks to be on the show. So when you created Jake, or you create the particular character, tell us about the man that painted the picture, Simon Crandor.
How do I do this? Simon Crandor has mm-hmm. paintings in museums and everything. He had disappeared shortly after he'd finished his last painting. The last time he had been seen, he had gone out onto a boat, his boat, and everybody thought he had drowned. And so his paintings, the minute he died, became much more valuable. And they were spread at that point out between museums, between art collectors. And this was the last one the only one, I think, that Winter had ever seen. But the other, when the art experts come in, and when Ham comes in, of course, they'd seen many others. And one of them had dispersed them. He was in charge of doing all that. Was that the question? Is that what you wanted to know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
or
exactly.
Or more about Simon Crandor, who was a very nice person, apparently.
He wasn't a very nice person, right? No, he wasn't.
No, he was.
He was a nice person.
I don't want to give the plot away too much,
no.
but he wanted to give towards the end, towards that time when he disappeared, he had come up with an idea of, I don't know how much I should say here.
No, never mind.
I won't say it.
Yeah, we don't want to tell them the dramatic twist at the end of the story, which really, I said, I had a feeling, but I wasn't sure. And I go like, oh, my God, that was totally brilliant. Because, actually, to be honest, it left room for a sequel to see
what
happened
next.
Somebody
else told me.
Yeah, I would think, you know, like, Peter a little bit older, Elise and Winter maybe getting along, maybe not getting along, still fighting over who owns the three paintings, and yet finding out what happens next when a reality sets in and they have to, you know, change their mindset. You don't know. So you described the island. Yeah, that's how I think. There was one more character. Who is Zinger?
Zinger. Well, there were two more. There was Zinger, Mr.
Depp.
Zinger. He did. He comes later. But there's also the other art expert, the old man.
Yeah.
You know. I'd rather not go into Zeb right now because.
Okay.
I think that gives away the plot too. But the
Zinger
was the art expert that had handled all of Simon Crandor's finances.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he did. He represented him. He was his agent. And the other one was his friend, his best friend, and very knowledgeable about his art. He knew where all the paintings were, that kind of thing, and knew the family really well, at least had in the past. He didn't know these new people, but he knew most of the family really well, in the past, in the very past I'm talking about.
We almost had Hurricane Hermine. I call her Hermione.
Yes.
We got a lot of wind. Today we've got a lot of wind, and it's supposed to really rain later, and I'm hoping that they're wrong about that because that would really just mess up my whole day. But when you describe the weather, everybody's been really scared about Hermine. And I've texted everybody in my family and all my nephews that are away at school. They said, did you get this hurricane? Did you get it? And nobody got it except a few people in Florida, unfortunately, and Georgia and North Carolina. And it's bracing somewhere else, and there's another one coming, Hurricane Newton. We can live without him, too.
Really?
So the weather and the rain and the cold and the fog, I mean, there were times when I wanted to put on a sweater while I was reading this. I'm going like, I'm cold all the time anyway. And how did you create the weather to add to the mystery and the suspense of the story? I mean, when there's a really bad storm and then characters can't get where they have to go or the lights go out or whatever, go like, oh, my God, I hope nobody comes in and kills anybody. So how come you did that, and how does that create more suspense for the story?
I lived on the Sound for years, and that happened to me often. With the hurricane coming in and the flooding, finally at the end, we used to do all these things, you know, put the furniture up in blocks and board the windows. At the end, we weren't doing any of that, and I was just evacuating with a little China dog, my own dog, I had two dogs, and photographs. You get to the point where you're kind of jaded. So anyway, I knew I could use the weather because I knew it well, and I wanted to write about it. Actually, that's the first time I think I've ever written about the sound or the ocean. But it's, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to a man in Iowa, and he said that he feels the same way about the miles and miles of corn fields. And as they sway in the wind and what happens to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's true. So I think it can happen to anyone.
Yeah, I know. I find that books that create especially, well, the cornfields or whether it's windmills or something that's really different, that adds to the mystery of the book, makes the reader want to say, okay, I can't wait to see how this is going to influence what happens to the character, especially a really bad storm could hinder whatever somebody has planned, including a killer, if they want it.
That's true.
So when you create a novel, if you decided to create a novel for our favorite character, Peeta, would she still remain 5 or 6, or would you create it when she's older to see where she turns out, what kind of a child, kind of a person she turns out to be?
If I have a sequel, that I haven't thought about, that I would think she'd have to be a little older.
Yeah.
And you can't stay stuck in time. Probably make her a little older. I think.
Well, it'd be funny if she turned out to be a rebellious teen that turned out to be more like her, Elise than more like Elise Elise than her mother, or that she decided that she's going to be more of a rebel. That would be interesting. So,
what do you think? I know what I think,
what
do you think?
I don't know. You know what? I have a 15-year-old niece that's a really good kid. And she got into mischief in school last year, and I straightened her out, even though she's in Florida and her aunt is up here. You know, she's a really sweet kid. She's not disrespectful. She's not nasty. She just got bored in school and decided she was going to cut class, which did not make me very happy. And I'm an educator. So that day made me even more unhappy. And I, you know, explained it to her, and she said, well, I don't want to go to summer school. I said, did I ask you if you wanted to go? So she's going, and she's acing it. And she's got tutors that I'm paying for, but it's worth it because I think we straightened her out. And I text her every morning before she goes to school. Remember, respect, keep it cool, do your homework, and call me if you need help. And she's been doing it because if she doesn't, the principal of the school is going to call me. So with kids, you don't know. I would hope that she maybe went into art, or that she went into writing, or that maybe she went into something else that might be interesting. I would hate to see her turn into somebody bad, but I would think that she would turn into somebody, maybe even a tough lawyer, or somebody that you can't mess with, that, you know, has her own mind, and that doesn't fall for the first guy that walks down the street.
Yeah. Well, I think she's a pretty, I tried to make her as, and I keep saying pure, but she's also very loving. And she takes things as they are. She doesn't question them. I mean, like Jake, when he talks about his childhood and the way he feels about time or things like that, she just accepts them, which I think is a really nice quality. Or Winter, when Winter's talking about her father and why he named her Winter, that kind of thing. She's very interested. And I don't know how many children of that age would be that interested.
No, she's very bright, Peeta. But then when you get older, you have to start, you know, to accept things as face value sometimes is great and sometimes it's not. And you have to be really careful. So
that's true.
What do you think will happen to both Elise and Winter now that they learn about the paintings? Do you think they'll ever come to a common thing? And what is it about money for them? I mean, everything is about money. And we've got the art experts, and we've got Sophie, and she's a real tricky character, too, before we close. So, if it comes to the ability, you know, money and stuff, who gets the painting and who gets the money? And who really owns it? And why would you want to sell it? Because it's such a beautiful painting.
Well, again, I don't want to give away the plot.
No.
Because that might. But what moves, and I've decided that in the world anyway, what moves most things is money. You know, always follow the money, that saying. Always, and then you'll find what you're looking for. Follow the money. And it's really true. I mean, that's why the two art, what's her name? My mind just went blank. That's why Clay is interested in it, the money. His motives. And Sophie, that's their major thrust is the money. They're pretty simple characters because that's what they want to be social and they want money. And they're the only two that are that simple, I think. The rest of them are not there just for the money. It's much more than that. So, and if I go into that, I think the plot will be... I don't want to spoil the plot.
Okay, so
it's kind of difficult.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's okay.
I just said
you don't
want to
give away what
it's difficult.
You don't want to give away the ending because people are not going to believe it. And yet, you sort of don't believe it because you're really not sure. So what's next for you? What are you creating next, and where can everyone learn more about your work?
I'm finishing another book right now that's historical and very long with multiple families, multiple characters, and it's very different from this one. I might go back to this one after. I've got another book that I'm thinking about doing as well. But maybe that's because a few people have asked me that now, whether I might have a sequel to this, which, I mean, might be very interesting.
Well, I think it would be really, really interesting, extremely interesting, even as a trilogy.
And you'd want
to write what happens.
You think you'd want to read it then?
Would I read it? I wouldn't ask you if I didn't want to read it. I have to be very honest, Diane. I'm very fussy about what I accept. There's book reviews. I've been doing this for quite a number of years, they told me, about 4 or 5, maybe more. And I don't accept every book to read. There are many publicists that have asked me to read books, and I go, like, not going to happen. I won't read PDF. I won't read anything other than a print book because I have to have the book in front of me so I could take it with me wherever I'm going and mess it up and circle and everything. If I didn't like it and if I didn't think that the plot was interesting, I would have told Noelle, I'm going to pass on this one. That's just the way I am. I won't read self-help if I don't have to, and I will not read erotica or porn, ever. That's not me.
Good.
Besides, I can tell you, my mother would be looking down on me and go like, are you serious? My sister passed away 6 years ago, and she's the reason I'm doing this. My mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and my book, The Vanishing Mind of Ruth Swerdloff, is on Amazon, and it's her story told in her words. And my sister said, you're becoming a couch potato. I'm not a couch potato anymore. I was almost 200 pounds. I'm 107 pounds, and I have not gained the weight. And she said, you're retiring from teaching. Why don't you become a book reviewer? And I said, what? So I reviewed a cookbook. My friend doesn't cook, and the author thought it was hilarious. And it's been like snowballed ever since. And the network, MJ Network, is in memory of my sister. And they have MJ Magazine, which any author that wants to write articles about writing tips, what their work, anything, will be accepted because I'm going to create MJ 9 next month. I did this because I cannot sit around doing nothing. And I was becoming, like my sister was right, a big, huge couch potato. But someone had to take care of my mother. And I was not going to leave that to anybody else but me since I lived in the same building. And my sister did help. Every Thursday we went shopping or whatever. So I missed that. On Thursdays I sort of was like, where are you to go shopping and buy me my presents for taking care of my mother? So, yeah, of course I would read it. I wouldn't say I would if I didn't. That sounds interesting. I would like to see what you do with it. And, of course, I want to read the historical fiction because historical fiction is my favorite. So before we close, you have about 2 minutes. Where can everyone learn about you and your work? That's good. Because Alan Topol and Alan Jacobson and Simon Chavez and Andrew Gross all write historical fiction, and some of them write actually true stories. And his true story, One Man About the Holocaust, was based on something that happened to his father-in-law. And I had a big box of tissues on that one. It was excellent. And before I forget, everybody, The Dead Boyfriend from R.L. Stein is coming out this month, and I got it autographed because I met him. I met them all at the Thriller Fest, and I was honored that he actually took a copy of my book, my new horror, and I was excited and honored that he even took it. So where can everyone learn more about you and your work? Where can they learn about you? Amazon and where else?
Well, on my website, it has, that's pretty, tells you where I'm going to be, but, for, you know, for appearances, and the reviews that are coming in. I just got a very good review yesterday, which made me happy.
You got
from
one for
me.
You got 5 stars, that's for sure.
Thank you. But the
Noel didn't
this other
send
one,
it to you. I'll have to remind her. Of course, I gave it 5 stars. I only interview authors whose books are 4.5 and 5 stars. I have to be honest. I'm very very particular. I will not, you know, spotlight a book unless I think the writing is quality writing or that is something that other people would read. And I have to tell you right now that my cousin's got her 3 hands out for this one. And my brother-in-law in Florida said, I want it too. I said, well, you'll have to, you know, do eeny, meeny and figure out who gets it. But, yeah, if I say a book is really fantastic, I've got at least 20 people that want my copy, and I tell them, go to Amazon and get it yourself, which sounds about right.
I could send you another one if you want.
Well, that would be great.
I'd
because
be
actually my cousin wants to read it, and the lady in the bakery, my friend Patty, who takes all my books, wants to read it. Well, everybody wants to read it. Especially, I love, you know what? I love the cover. I love the fact that you can't tell who that is on the cover.
Oh, yeah, that's good. That's, I hope to, you know, throw out a sense of mystery. Right,
yeah,
that's
it does,
great.
You can't tell the age of the person.
Mysterious.
You can't tell who it is. You can't tell if it's an older person or a younger person. You can't tell. You can tell that maybe it's female or male, but you can't really tell. So that's what makes it even great. And that little lighthouse at the end makes it even greater. So you wonder, like, what is happening there? Is the person facing forward or is the person pegging the other way? You can't tell in which direction the person is.
Right. Well, I got a review yesterday from a man who thought the book was wonderful. That's what he said. I'm just repeating. And which actual review pleased me because it was a man. Because I thought this book might appeal more to women, but I guess not. I guess it's both. What do you think?
Art industry appeals to everyone. I mean, I love going to art auctions. I love looking at paintings. I love art museums. The Metropolitan Museum of Art in the Bronx is my favorite. The Museum of Modern Art. I love stuff like that. You don't know. It's hard to tell who your audience is. But when it's a book about art and paintings and you add in the stuff about art experts and stuff like that and the information, yeah, other people are going to want to read it. As a matter of fact, my husband's inside because he's working from home. And I might hand him the book. He might wonder. He said, oh, well, what's that? But he never reads anything I write, anything I read. He just doesn't. But he might. I know my brother-in-law wants it because he reads it more of an eclectic, you know, group of books where my husband reads strange books. No, he's reading Game of Thrones, actually, which I won't read. So I want to thank you so much. And, yes, you have to send me the next one. And if you write the next one, I seriously want it so we could do another interview because it would be really nice to compare Peregrine Island to whatever title you pick for the next one if you do the sequel. So we could talk about both and do a parallel with them.
Yeah, I will. I'm trying to get this big one finished right now. I mean, it's going to have to be copy edited afterward, but and maybe even edited, though I hope not. So when that's done, I'll certainly come to you and then go back to the I have two others. I would have this sequel to this one and one more that has nothing to do with it that interests me. So that's fun.
That would be really great, but I want to thank you so much. And I'm very happy to say that Hermine hasn't hit yet because the sun is shining and it's beautiful outside. And I'm looking forward to the next one. And if you want me to read the historical fiction before it comes out anytime, just let me know. I'll be more than happy to read it. I'll be more than happy to write a positive blurb for the back cover anytime you want because this has been really fun. And only because you're special did I do 11 o'clock. I only do 10 and 9. But I appreciate it. I'm so glad you were able to do the show. And thank you so much. And have a great day, Diane. And I can't wait to read your next book. And everybody out there, join me next Tuesday with Lynn Constantine and The Veritas Deception. You won't be disappointed. I'm not deceiving you. Bye-bye and have a great day.
Hello?